Okay, well, we'll begin, and some other people might come, and then and we'll ask you to tell them what they missed. But this is a dating thing, and there have been, what, three people who've been to a previous dating one with me? Right? You?
Everyone.
You? And you. Okay. Well, one of the things that, the reason that I gave it that title this time, it all comes down to this, is you probably all had a bit of trauma when you first recognized that you were attracted to some people of the same gender, right? You had a little, it didn't just say, oh, I see, well, that's the case, okay. So you had a little bit of difficulty with it, right? And maybe some of you are still having a little bit of difficulty. And then remember, it was very difficult to sort of bring up the subject with your next of kin and your family and all that, and some of you haven't still done it, and you're worried about prejudice out there and all kinds of stuff, right? So, I think that it's very important then to recognize, come on in. So I think it's very important, given all that you went through, and maybe are still going through, in recognizing that you were attracted to some people of the same sex, and all the difficulty then that imposed, it's very important then to think, well, now, what was all that about? And of course, what that all was about was a relationship, right? I mean, if you could forego a relationship, then it wasn't all that important that you were gay. Nobody would ever even have to know it. You just go ahead and not even deal with it. But the fact that you dealt with it meant that it was related to getting involved with somebody. Is that right? Everybody agree? Now, when you think about all that you put up with, I'd like you to ask yourself, when you think about wanting to date a particular individual, was getting involved with this individual what all that was about? Or is it a pretty foregone conclusion that this person isn't going to meet the need that I have? Now, sometimes you've been interested in somebody who was a stranger to you, and you knew from just a little bit of information that this is not probably a wise choice. Anybody ever been in that position? So if you thought this is not a wise choice, but I still want to see what might happen, as though you're watching somebody else's life. You know, people say, well, we just want to see what's going to happen. Well, aren't you going to be a principal in this? I just want to see how it turns out. That's a passive observer status, you see. It'll turn out as you contribute to it. See? Or don't. So, when you remind yourself of all the angst and the difficulties that you put yourself through to come out, then the person that you're interested in and the person who can indeed meet your intimacy needs, that's a pretty tall order, isn't it? Pretty tall order. So you don't have any time or energy to waste on running after the wrong person. Not even if you think, oh, that person's so cute. Of course, the person's heterosexual. Or the person is already in a relationship. Or the person's a horse thief. Yeah. Whatever. See. But he's so cute. Or she's so cute. Okay. So, it's a tall order. Now, that it is a tall order explains why it is so difficult to get the right match, right? What we're going to talk about today is going to be aimed at enabling you to go as reasonably and as efficiently and as wisely as possible to get from where you are as a single person to getting where you want to go, and that is in a relationship that can actually meet your intimacy needs of receiving and giving companionate love and support. So I speak in terms of three legs to the stool of intimacy. And these three legs of the stool are really like three legs of a stool. If a stool has only two legs, it'll fall over, right? So you have to have these three. This is a situation where, you know, two out of three ain't bad is bad. You have to have all three. Most people seem to screen another individual only on one of those legs. Which leg do you suppose they screen? What is it that's uppermost in their mind?
Physical.
The physical attraction. Right. I often used to say, you know, use the illustration of Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, because when he was in the news after he had killed and eaten a bunch of people, some of my clients said, well, you know, I would have gone home and he was cute.
Yes, sir.
Well, you wouldn't have been here to tell about it. But by the way, if you read the latest record that I put out for the summer, you'll know that Jeffrey Dahmer became a Christian in prison and was baptized by an evangelical preacher. And before he then was murdered by one of the other inmates. So that is even a more complicated story than you might know from the stereotype. Has a very interesting book been written about it by the preacher who baptized him. So obviously just what person looks like doesn't tell you anything, right? Now, it's important. It's one of the legs of the stool, which I call the mutual fascination with the gestalt of the other individual. Now, that may sound very unromantic, but what I mean is, and if you examine who it is that you've been attracted to, it is an experience of being fascinated with another individual that you perceive to be very much not me, right? Very other than your own sense of self, right? Isn't that true? Those are the people you tend to have a crush on? People that you think, oh, that's not me, and you know, and fascinatingly, not me. Not negatively not me, you know. But fascinatingly not. Which is another way of saying, and a lot of people are naive about this, they don't understand this, and they give themselves a lot of problems about it. And that is that nobody is attracted to himself or herself. You cannot find fascinating otherness in the mirror. you cannot find fascinating otherness in thinking about yourself, because the yourself you're thinking about is very familiar. Same old stuff in my mind, same old stuff in the mirror, and until you start to, you know, age a little. And then somebody said, as he aged, looked in the mirror every morning, he says, well, you don't look familiar, but I'll wash your face anyway. But you can't find fascinating otherness in your sense of self. Now, the mistake that many people make is they extrapolate from that experience, that experiential sense of themselves, and the experience of looking in the mirror or of thinking of themselves. They make the mistake of extrapolating from that and projecting that into other people's minds as though that's what other people are going to have to stumble over in involving themselves with me. Old, unsexy me. See, nobody sees himself or herself as sexy. Now, you may think, well, that's a little strange, because the people I find sexy surely must think of themselves as sexy. What does it have to do with their seeing themselves just because you see themselves as sexy? Their sexiness is in your brain. Their sexiness isn't in their brain. They'd have a real problem if they were going all weak in the knees over the thought of themselves. Right?
Isn't that narcissism?
No, narcissism is quite the opposite. That's a popular idea of narcissism. But narcissism is something else. Narcissism is really a great deal of self-doubt. So when you realize that the you in your brain cannot be sexy, and the him or her in your brain, that is the person that you're attracted to, is in your brain, but not in his or her brain, because nothing in your brain is drooling out and dripping out and getting into the other person's brain, right? Then you have another problem, if that's happening. But see, naively, you've grown up all your life thinking, no, my self-concept, that's out there for everybody to see. But it's never been out there for anybody to see. So even if you go back to grade school and you're embarrassed about the way you seem to yourself to be in grade school or junior high school or whatever, nobody saw you that way. Isn't that a relief? Nobody saw you that way because nobody was using your brain. And in some sense, you weren't using your brain, thinking that they were using your brain. Nobody else has ever used your brain. So nothing in your own brain has ever gotten into anybody's brain, including your you and your them. Now, if that is true, and isn't it self-evidently true, nobody else is using your brain, and you're not using the other person's brain, then when you think about approaching that person to say hello, it's not like it used to be, where you used to think, you didn't call it my me, you just thought of it as me, right? Out there for anybody to see. My me, or me, as you used to think, has to approach this person who is so sexy. I don't think I will. Who here has done that? As a matter of fact, I think I will even pretend not to be attracted to that person. Right? Who here has done that? Okay, now listen. A few honest people put their hands up, and most of you, you didn't, but you did. Right? You did behave this way. Now think of it this way. There have been people who were attracted to you, but because they stumbled over their own sense of self in their brain, they didn't see their way clear to approach you. Just think of all the people that found you sexy, and they never let you know. Now you might think, oh, that didn't happen. He's just trying to cheer us up. didn't it happen in the other direction? I mean, it's countless people, even at this conference, that you have thought, we're attractive, right? Right?
Mm-hmm.
You can put your hands up. Who here has seen somebody attractive? Okay. Guess what? Everybody's put their hands up. Some people, maybe even in this room, have found you attractive. See? But you didn't know about it because they were too scared to let you know, just as you have been too scared to let them know. Now, it doesn't take courage to let them know, because courage is required only if there's a dangerous situation. What is the danger? If somebody that you're imprinted to isn't imprinted to you. No danger. Because the fantasy relationship that you think, oh, I need, wouldn't be what you're thinking of if the person isn't interested, right? It would be hell. See? So, what's the danger? They cannot reject you, because the you that you're worried is going to be rejectable is just the you in your brain. And they can't say yes or no to that. They can say yes or no to their version of you. Now, what if you're attracted to that person, and that person happens to be attracted to you, and you're both attracted on the basis of the very thing, whatever the complicated thing is, that is your homosexual orientation. That's what it's about. And that was basically fixed back there at the time you were 5 years old. And so then, you know, you meet each other, and for men, it's largely visually mediated. For women, it's a little more complicated, not just visually. But you see that gestalt, you know, and you're, wow. But how many here have ever thought you wanted to get involved with somebody and then after a coffee date or something decided, no, right? Who here has ever thought, I need to get away from that person? But before you thought, I needed that person. Now suppose you hadn't had the coffee date. Suppose the person had said no. You'd carry that around with you the rest of your life. Oh, if only that person would have. This is what we would have. Mm-hmm. Oh. So never hold yourself hostage to what never happened, you know, that you make up a big whole story about how nice it would have been if only. That's just nonsense. If you approach somebody and the person says no, that is a successful screening. Right? It isn't. Again, this is not just to cheer you up. This is a successful screening because it would be hell to try and build a life with this person who didn't want to build a life with you. Wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. And vice versa. To say no to somebody that you're not interested in, that's doing him a favor. Doing her a favor, right? Yeah. We have a thing in New York called date bait. And people go to it and they all, you know, stand around about 50 or 60 guys, and everybody has a number and stands up and they have like a minute to say something interesting about themselves, you know. And some of them waste the minute by saying, I'm into show tunes and walks on the beach, you know. Hello, you know. That would apply to everybody there, basically. You have to say something about your values. Now, saying something about your values, for example, that, my Christian faith is important to me. Now, a lot of people, that's going to be, don't want that person. That's a successful screening, you see. But one or two, they'll perk up their ears at that. Wouldn't you? Especially if you were attracted to the person, right? So, but when they don't get a match, you know, they come back and I didn't get any matches. I said, how many people were there? 60. You had 60 successful screenings. within an hour. That's pretty good. Yeah, it's true. So keep in mind that your you is safely tucked away in your brain. It's not going to get out in anybody else's brain. So you can just sit there and think of all the things that are wrong about you, you know, your voice or your build or your, you know, education or your, you know, whatever. Nobody thinks that of you. The more negative things you can think of, the better, in a sense, because you're just piling up stuff that they can never think, because you're using your brain, right? Isn't that true? This isn't to cheer you up. This is biologically the case. Okay? Okay, so you must move on from only screening in terms of your visually mediated sense of the person. Because remember, this person is a total stranger. Right? Even if you meet the person in a kind of shared value venue, that this is still, you know, like I quoted Walt Hearn as saying, lots of nuts in the Lord's fruitcake, you know. So, just because they're here doesn't mean a great deal. But it does help to do some screening in shared value venues, because maybe, yes, they do have some shared values. And that brings us to the second leg of the stool. Shared values. It's not going to work if you're the bank robber and you're attracted to the sheriff. So when I say values, I'm not just talking about goody-goody kind of things. The two bank robbers might have, you know, shared values, right? And the two sheriffs, but not the sheriff and the bank. If Christian faith is really important to you, then it can be very isolating to have a partner who's a nice person but just doesn't get it and isn't interested in coming to EC meetings and stuff, or vice versa, you see? Now, two people who share values, for example, they are both indifferent about religion and so forth, they share values. Or, you know, here's a Presbyterian and here's a Catholic, but neither gives a damn about Christ. Well, they share values, even though one's a Presbyterian and one's a Catholic. Mm-hmm. So you have to really identify what really are my values. And my values are simply what's a big deal to me. What is a big deal to me? What is a big deal to me has to be a big deal to the partner, and vice versa. Now, I'm not talking about interests, shared interests. There are people that, you know, somebody might be really interested in stamp collecting. That's an interest of that person. Or somebody interested in opera, and you're not interested in opera at all. That's okay, providing that the interests are not really values. If somebody eats, sleeps, and drinks opera or stamp collecting, and has to go every weekend to every stamp show on the East Coast or West Coast, you know, then that's a value, right? That's a big deal. And you're not in on that. Okay. So that's not so wise to get involved with somebody like that. So shared values, an involuntary response to the fascinating otherness of the other person. Those are the two of the... Everybody turn off. Yeah. So what in the world do you think is the third leg of the stool? Now, those of you who've been here before, don't answer quickly. What would you say? Let's have some guesses. What's the third leg of the stool? One's values, one's involuntary attraction that is mutual. Can't be one-sided, has to be mutual. Shared values. And what's the third, you think?
Goals.
Goals.
What do you want to get out of life?
Well, that would be values, yeah.
Intellectual.
Any other guesses?
I mean,
the intellectual may be shared values. If you, you know, if you really think it's a big deal to share, you know, a common intellectual level of interest in, you know, things, yeah, that can be.
But a lot of times the fascinating otherness is that one may be a college professor and the other is a person in business or something that's not all that interested in books or something like that, you see. But the fascinating otherness it gets expressed in differences of that sort of style and that sort of thing.
And one of the things that's very important to keep in mind is very often an attribute of the fascinating otherness can be a problem. It's no reason to say, oh, this can't make go of it, but it can be a problem. You know, in other words, if one person is, in terms of personality, very up and gregarious and so forth, you're not attracted to the person because of that, but that goes along with the personality. Whereas you are more reserved and quiet and don't want to make a scene and, you know, that sort of a thing. But when you have to then, you know, are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? Are we going to go here? No, I just want to stay at home. Oh, no, I want to go to, you know. You see, well, that then stems from the fascinating otherness and takes us directly to that third leg of the stool, which we haven't identified. That's a clue.
Well, availability.
Well, availability, I think, goes without saying. You know, I mean, I'm not mentioning like the guy's heterosexual or the, you know, availability. Yeah, is important.
Well, then there's sex, but the kind of compatibility in terms of maybe some similar age.
Age is not a necessary thing to consider. There are people who are younger and older, and both don't act their age. You know, that sort of thing. So just as such, it doesn't mean something.
Sexual compatibility.
Well, you're getting close to it by compromising. Who said sexual compatibility? No, that's not one, and we'll get into why that isn't one.
Yeah. Interest.
No, not interest, unless, as I say, the interest is really a value. You eat, drink, and sleep the interest. But you're close to it.
Dialogue, compromise.
Well, the compromise.
Character.
In other words, huh?
Character?
No.
Negotiation?
Hmm?
Negotiation? Knowing how to deal?
Yes, both these. In other words, the ability and the willingness to be a team player. That's the third leg. Now, some people maybe think they have the ability to be a team player, but they don't. Now, fortunately, learning to be a team player is possible, if there's the will to be a team player. Forget it if there's no will to be a team player. If I always have to have it my way, well, forget it, you see. I know, as I said, if I always have to have it my way, because you notice we're talking about screening somebody else, see if we have shared, but, you know, sometimes the problem is in us. We are not ready to be a team player with anybody, see, because we've gotten so used to just consulting ourselves. You know, we flip on the TV, we don't have to check anybody else. What do you want, you know, just blast it away. You know, or, you know, blast the music, whatever is your favorite. Or, you know, all kinds of things. You never consult anybody else. And you got used to that. Well, that's not going to go. You have to be a team player. That'd be very neat. Everything's always, you know, never a wet towel on the bathroom floor. Anybody like that? Ever a wet towel on the bathroom floor? Anybody like that? Anybody like never not a wet towel on the bathroom floor? Sometimes people complain to me, you know, oh, he's so messy, you know, always a towel on the bathroom floor. I say, look at that bathroom towel on that bathroom floor and say, he's here. If he weren't here, it could be Neatoville. Okay? Everything perfect. Like it was before he came. And you were miserable and lonely and so forth, you see? So the willingness and the ability, the will and the skill to compromise, to negotiate, to hear, to prioritize, you see? That's very important. Now, if you screen somebody for those three things, there's no reason why it cannot be a successful relationship. If you slack off on screening on one of those, just one, let alone two or three, it won't work. Some people get themselves so pessimistic that they will settle for somebody that they're not attracted to, and it's not going to work. Even though the other person is very much attracted to you and sort of finagles his way into the situation. Yeah? No, won't work. Yeah, but he's so nice. He's a nice person. Yes. But there's no chemistry. There's no spark, you see there. So won't work. And the same is true in the other direction, you know. You keep trying to sweeten the pie with somebody that isn't attracted to you involuntarily. You're doing yourself no favor. So you're picking up all the bills, all the tabs, you know, and you're sweetening the pie and trying to say exactly what you think the person wants to hear and all of that. That's a lot of wasted money and effort. And sooner or later, the other person's going to be very angry. And sooner or later, you're going to be very angry. So don't waste your time detouring down these crazy sideways. Go as efficiently and as effectively as you can and get through to what really matters. That is to screen somebody where there really is evidence that there is mutual attraction, shared values, and evidence of the willingness and the ability to be a team player. If on your first date, none of the things that you suggest doing in terms of, you know, where to have that cup of coffee or where to, you know, meet or where is suitable for him, I say, you know, I have a bathroom to clean. You see? Because that's not going to work. You know, if you have that data that quickly, be thankful. Does this make sense?
So these are the tweens that you use for the baby. Not necessarily, I mean, it could be for a relationship. I mean, it could be a potential relationship, but I would think that in a relationship you're going to be learning a lot of things as you...
Well, this is why you must not just meet somebody today and, you know, send out news of what the silver pattern you want tomorrow. It's very important to give it time. Yeah. Because if you don't give it time, you're not going to do yourself or the other person a favor, you see. Because anybody that you're going to meet, even here, if you haven't met the person before, the person is literally a stranger. Literally a stranger. And every stranger gets stranger. before he or she gets more familiar. Who here has noticed that? I had no idea, you know. I mean, even if you just sit down at the lunchtime with somebody, you know, and you don't even have to say anything except, oh, hi, I'm Joe, fine. And even just let them talk and listen in. By the time lunch is over, you will have said, that's not who I thought it was. You see, right? Yeah. I knew somebody, I was very interested in somebody else. And then he just overheard some conversation. The imprint flew out the window. Because the person was so into talking about himself that it was a turnoff. So you can screen people without even showing your hand, especially at a thing like this. Just observe, listen. You had a question.
Is there a quicker way to be able to get over that, like taking out your heart, just stomping over it?
Taking out your what? What did you say?
Since everything's in the mind.
Yeah.
Okay. And I notice this because I do this to myself. I know that this person has no idea what's going through my mind. And my heart is saying, you know, kaboom, kaboom, kaboom. Is there a way you just take your heart out and just stomp it?
Just get it over with.
Well, actually the heart plumps the blood. That's it. It makes a nice Valentine, but the attraction is in the brain. See? So, you have to, though, be critical of that involuntary attraction that is in the brain.
But it's the feelings. It's the feelings that come with it.
Well, but the feelings are attached to what you're telling yourself. You see? If I think with my brain, if I think I'm in danger, I will feel fear. And it will do me no good to say, oh, don't be afraid. You know, calm down. Jesus knew this. Every time he said, fear not, he said, because. See, right? Don't be afraid. And the angels of Bethlehem. Don't be afraid because, right? What follows the because can change your mind. Oh, I see, I'm not in danger. Okay. Now, if you think that the person you're attracted to here at the conference can see you're you, you'll be afraid. And it won't do you any good. So, have some courage and don't be afraid and all that. But if you intuit, nobody sees old boring you that you see in your brain. And you really intuit, nobody else sees in your brain. Hey, I don't have to tell myself, don't be afraid. What's there to be afraid about? They can't see what I was afraid to see. See, you change your mind, you'll change your feelings indirectly.
What about defensiveness?
What?
I think what he's referring to is defensiveness.
There's no need to be defensive if there's no danger.
But once you know me, then you find out this little, you know, this little tidbit. It may be okay.
Which
but
is the tidbit?
Oh, I don't know. Pick something. I'm very opinionated, you know. Oh, my.
Okay, but if the person is very opinionated, if the first time you see somebody, he's very opinionated, you might think, oh, isn't that cute? But after a while, opinionated doesn't keep being cute, right? So very opinionated can interfere with team playing, yeah? And being able to be, share time and space.
But because of that, you may not want, like in my case, which I'm too stupid to actually do this, but I may not want to play that card on first hand.
Which card on first hand?
The opinionated part, you know.
That's why, that was even...
Rather than being all opinionated and telling you what I think about this, that, and the other, ask you questions.
Absolutely.
Leave that for the second date or the third date. Be defensive.
As a matter of fact, everybody basically does that. I mean, there are a few people who don't have a clue, and they let it all hang out. But most people, if they have a design on, you know, you, they will sweeten the pie. They will tell you what they think you want to hear about themselves and about anything. That's why it takes some time to really find out. You know, there's a booklet that I wrote that's over in the resource called Trust. Anybody read it? This stuff is written to be read. You understand? And I say, you can trust anybody. You can trust anybody. Somebody said, oh, I can't trust him. He's always late. Can't trust him. You better trust him to be late. Bring a book. You know. You can trust anybody to be himself or herself. But in order to know who himself or herself tends typically to be, you have to have a little bit of time with that person. Okay? But a lot of people don't take that time. They look at somebody, and because this person is attractive to them, they read into that person all kinds of nice qualities, you know. The person is bright and loving and has all that it takes to be a partner and, you know, and so forth. And there's no evidence for that at all. So you have to spend some time getting to know the person. Okay? And letting the person get to know you. Because the person also has a stereotyped sense of you that isn't based in anything other than just that imprinted response. Any other questions? Yeah.
Of the three legs, the first one is the one that I struggled with in after having been married for 30 years and taking time to work through a lot of my grief relative to that separation and so on, and then beginning to date. By this time, I'm in my mid-50s and then moving, you know, quickly toward 60. And I concluded, and maybe wrongly, but I concluded that I needed to not let the first leg of the stool, that attraction kind of thing, become the overriding or the primary starting place. Because I found myself attracted to all these beautiful younger guys, but it was like I realized that the chance of there being the shared values and the willingness to be a team player through the remainder of my life, as I had fully experienced in my marriage and, you know, for 30 years, that wasn't as likely. And so that in a sense, I found myself looking for somebody who was not so physically attractive, but with a more attractive total package in terms of the other shared values, experience, somebody who'd been married, somebody who knows what it is to be a father and have kids and realizes that the responsibilities of a family that continue on even though you're no longer married, and somebody who would share other values. And so it was like, okay, so even though I'm attracted to that 25-year-old or that 30-year-old or that even that 40-year-old, that I really need to diminish that importance of that attraction part to increase, in a sense, the likelihood of being able to really have a lifetime partner who shares the kinds of values and so on that I'm looking for. Does that make sense?
Well, you see, While the imprinted response is visually mediated, at least mainly for men, it's visually mediated, it's not, the content of that imprint is not simply what a camera could take a picture of, you see. The content of that visually mediated imprint is a lot of what you've talked about, because you're talking about a personality and a level of maturity and, you know, and that sort of a thing. And so that is all mediated. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that you can trust that it's there in that person just by what is visually mediated, but you look at somebody and you think, oh, this is, you know, this person is not only attractive, but but you know, physically and so, but the attraction is, you know, he's, this person is not a bozo, you know, and so. But then you start a conversation and you discover he is a bozo. Now what happens? The imprint explodes. You see? Now, he still looks the same. You see? If, you know, somebody spun you around and came back, you know, can you point him out? Yeah, there he is. This very cute bozo. You know? And I'm not interested in that, you see? One of my clients once said at the gay pride parade, he was following somebody for a couple of blocks, you know, trying to catch up, stranger. And at the red light, the person turned around and it was a lesbian. The imprint. Because he was reading into it, you know, this cute little boy or something, you know. I mean, it wasn't a boy at all. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, I mean, you could recognize this person, but the imprint went, you see. So it's like that line, I don't know if you've ever heard it, the person, you know, was very attractive and then he spoke and the purse fell out. kind of did in the sense, because so anyway, so it's just that the whole gestalt. That's why I say the whole sense of the persona, right, is what you're attracted to. Now, I think basically evolutionarily, it is true that heterosexual men and gay men are attracted often to people in general who are a bit younger than older, but that is largely a phenomenon evolutionarily of being able to be involved with somebody who's capable of having a baby. Well, that is irrelevant in this case. So you're sort of fighting against some evolution there in that sort of a thing. But one of the ways that, you know, you can still grant, well, this is a very, you know, fresh-faced young person, but listen in. And it's pretty boring. See? So, yeah.
Is there a black and white to the imprintation, the persona, i.e.
an either-or kind of thing?
Yeah, it's like...
It's either there or it's not.
Bam or none.
Yes, it's either there or it's not. However, it doesn't necessarily register on first seeing the person. The thing is, most people, if it doesn't register immediately, they discount the individual, you see. But if you're thrown in together, say, you know, in the same class or Bible study or, you know, whatever, work, whatever, and so you're sort of forced to have continuing interaction with that person, and you get to know that person, then, again, because of that sense of persona, person starts to sound a lot better than you thought and look a lot better, and you start to get infatuated. with that fascinating otherness, you see, in the individual. But that happens usually later on only if you really are thrown together, because if it's not immediately mediated for you, then you tend to just discount that person. If it's in a situation where if you don't get the person's name and you know, card or whatever, you're not going to see the person again.
Is that a mistake then to do that, or because it takes so long to get there?
Well, no, I wouldn't say, you know, if you find somebody, you know, that you're not immediately attracted to, you should go out of your way to see if it ever comes out, you know, or anything like that. But just know that it can. But also know that the immediate take is in 999 times out of 1,000 going to get modified away so that you don't want that person, or that person doesn't want you, even if it's mutual. You know, so, yeah.
Well, another thing is that you might take maybe past experiences, like, you know, maybe there's somebody that, you know, looks like somebody that you didn't have a good experience with before. And then you go, oh, there's a typical job, there's a typical whatever it may be. And then it's like, you just like, nah, I'm not even interested. Well, you might just potentially be, you know, blowing that person out of the water without even having a chance to get
right.
So it's like, because you've taken that, you know, past experience and projected onto that person and said, oh yeah, he's a typical person.
Right. Some people, they've had a bad experience with somebody who maybe used a particular cologne. And they get the whiff of it and, you know, that's it. Yeah, there are those kinds of associations. And you have to try and remind yourself, now this is not that person. This is somebody different, you know, even if it's the same profession or it's the same, you know, he also is Italian or, you know, whatever, you see, yeah. Oh, and the question over here about the sexual compatibility that you mentioned. That's a big mistake, I think, that people make. They think that, you know, there has to be, you know, some people talk in terms of top and bottom and, you know, all that kind of nonsense, really. To say that's a killer in the situation, well, it can be a killer, but if it is, then people don't understand what intimacy is about, you see. Because to say you're behaviorally, in terms of the sex, incompatible is like almost saying like you're gastronomically incompatible, you know, because you like spaghetti and this is a vegan or something like that, you know. Okay, spaghetti is vegan, is vegetable, but you know, I mean, if you like steaks and you're gonna date a vegetarian, you know. Well, that's when that leg of the stool about compromise and negotiation and, you know, and that sort of thing. Because the big thing in terms of intimacy with you and the partner when you're dining is not what's on the plate, is it? If it is, you're with the wrong person. See? It's not on what's on the plate, it's who you're dining with. And the same way with what are we going to do? Are we going to, you know, touch this part of the body or that part of the body? You know, well, let's work it out. And if I don't, you know, like to do that, well, then why force me? Any more than, you know, if I don't like sushi, why you keep pushing the sushi in front of me or the, you know, whatever, you see? Why? Where's the love and caring and support, you see? So, the big thing is, if you really are imprinted to each other, you cannot get enough of each other, that's the experience, right? If you're imprinted to someone, you can't get enough of that person. And if it's mutual, you can't get enough of that person. But we're going to say, oh, but because you don't do this in bed, you know, well then, forget you, you know. That doesn't make any sense, you see? Because it's not the juxtaposing of these nerve endings with these nerve endings that is your need. Your need is to connect with the human being that you're attracted to and that he's attracted to you. That is the need. That is what, as we started out earlier today saying, that's what you went through all of the angst about coming out for, you know? Not Tinker Toys. Does that make sense?
If I may,
yeah.
The words are great.
Yeah. Now, what's the problem?
Well, that defensive nerve is saying, do not say this. But
hey, listen, I tell my clients all the time, ask anything, say anything, disagree with what I say, and argue until you lose the argument. You've won then, because then the thing that you were thinking that doesn't work has been changed, and the thing that I'm trying to tell you to understand has been transferred into your thinking, and now you see. But you can't just say, oh yeah, I agree, and not really agree, you see?
Well, integral with my desire for men and whatnot is I like the idea that my body is satisfying that function of their need.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not into that, then we have a functional disconnect that's going to be a major problem.
But your body being a vehicle of sharing that person's life and pleasuring that person and so forth is not about what actual sex acts you do any more than it's where the two of you go to have a meal together. Whether it's an Italian restaurant or a sushi restaurant or something like that. You can go to your favorite restaurant by yourself, you see. If you're going to have the experience of going to a restaurant with the person that you can't get enough of, well then, isn't being with that person the big deal? Not what you're going to be eating. The same way with the behavior in bed. It's not the behavior in bed. It's you can't get enough of the physical presence of the person, you know, and the emotional presence of the person. You see, that's what is the big deal, isn't it?
If I can extend that,
yeah.
You know, again, there are lots of guys in my life, wonderful guys. They have no bloody interest in me whatsoever. They're either straight, or they're young, or they don't like fat guy, whatever, okay, whatever the thing is. We have great relationship, great conversations, I have a great time with them.
Mm-hmm.
But inside me is a burning desire for more. Now, that's going to continue, even
yeah.
If we turn around and spend an hour French kissing, even if we spend an hour rolling around in the bed. Because my...
You mean with the person who isn't interested in being involved with you sexually?
Well, my experience has been that I don't feel like we've really gotten anywhere unless he, you know, my body has been...
Well, but you see, it's not about your body, and it's and either for you or for him. It's about whether or not there is that imprinted response to the persona that for him you are, or the other direction. Now you may be imprinted to the persona you think he is, but if he isn't imprinted to you, then your need isn't going to be met by getting into bed with him. See? Because he's not going to be available to you for that kind of, you know, physical relationship. Yeah, you may like the same kind of TV show and watch that and so forth, but then if that's what you can do with him, then you have received your reward, as it were, you know, biblical stuff. Then that's what's available. You see? If you think, well, that's a cute person, Well, seeing that person, that's all that is available from that person, because he's not interested in you.
Right.
Yeah. But your need isn't being met, yes. So you have to find somebody where there is a mutual imprint, you see. Because you can't just go to bed with a body part, see. And sexual interaction is not a body part, you see. It's not a disemboweled whatever, you see. It's a full person, see.
But that's including sexual compatibility.
Yes, but that is what the imprint is about. It's sexual compatibility. If you want to call, if you want to speak of it in terms of sexual compatibility, I'm talking about it as an imprint to the persona. You see, nobody wants to have sex with somebody that he's not interested in sexually. You can have a good friend, but you know. The interest sexually is that imprint. Oh, yeah, you, and then over here. Yeah.
I've had that experience where we couldn't get enough of each other.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference because there's a lot of ways to make love.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter how, because you want to be with that person.
Yes, yes.
You don't really care.
No.
About
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the rest.
Yeah, exactly. As a matter of fact, you see, you can have the same nerve-ending stimulation by masturbating, but it's not meeting your intimacy need. You can have the same physical nerve-ending stimulation with somebody who is of the wrong gender, you know, that is wrong for you. See, and you can still have an orgasm with that, you see. So sexual attraction is not about orgasm, it's not about nerve-ending stimulation, it's about the experience, as you say, I can't get enough of you, and all that I read into that idea of you, and in a compatible thing, you can't get enough of me. You know? And then, even in growing older and, you know, physically changing or going through illness or financial problems or whatever, you know, you don't stick around for just the good time because I can't get enough of you. See? That's what it's about, you know. Yeah.
Question, clarification on sexual compatibility. Would you say include don't really regard if the other person is interested in their sexual activities involve a lot of shaming or pain, inducing pain on others?
Well, I would say that is basically a psychological problem.
I know a lot of people that are into that kind, both of those kinds of things.
I'll tell you why they are.
It freaks me out.
Yeah, well, it should. Because, you know, now, what is going on there in that, you know, subsuming it under S&M, for example, or, you know, that sort of thing, is game playing. Because they're tripping over their sense of self. And so they think, well, you're not going to accept me just showing up. If we arrange this little gameplay thing, where you agree ahead of time that I'm going to behave in a certain way toward you, and you have to be my slave and comply, guess what? You'll never reject me, you see? Anything I want, I'll just tell you to do, and you'll do, you see? And that safeguards me from rejection. But of course it doesn't really, because the person who's trying to safeguard himself from rejection is in fact in that very thing reinforcing that he's rejectable. Because you're saying only, I mean you're doing only what he's saying because we're playing this little game. It's not sincere, you see. And the same way it works in the other direction. Doesn't matter whether you know, one is the master and one is the slave, or reverse, and this one is the master and this one is the slave. It doesn't matter, because the agreed upon terms is whatever you do, I will do. Then, what if whatever you tell me to do, I'll do, even if you shame me or you hit me or whatever. That will assure me that I won't be rejected, you see? Because I'll just do whatever, you know, see? But that's a lot of elaborate defense mechanism. It's not an orientation. See? You can't add it to, you know, GLBTXYZSM, it's not an orientation. It is a defense mechanism. And it's a defense mechanism between two people who don't know how to overcome their misuse of their sense of self and have a healthy adult relationship. So you have every right to say, this stinks. Does that make sense? Yeah, you have a question.
Well, from what I see, it can be kind of mixing aspects, because you're talking here about three, like a methodology for screening a person for a relationship. But I think that this methodology can be applied to three aspects of the self, of a person: body, mind, and spirit. And in regard of sex, you can do the same thing. Mutual attraction, shared values, team player. The same goes for spirit and for the mind. So I think that this is more like a methodology than...
Okay, more like what?
Methodology.
Oh, a method, yeah. Methodology.
Just screen someone in those three aspects, body, mind, and spirit. And then I can have an idea of what you expect with that person in order for me to integrate that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing I would say, though, it doesn't so neatly classify as body, soul, and spirit. Or body and, is that what you said? Body, soul,
mind.
Body, soul, and mind. Body, mind, and spirit, yeah. Is that really all of those are involved in all of the in all of them, you see. In other words, the imprinting is a sense of a persona, of the whole thing, the whole person. And the body is part of that. And the person's mind and being interesting to me and all of that is all part of that. And even when the body changes as it goes older, there is still that fascinating otherness, you see, that I experience by being around that person, you know, that I'm attracted to. And that can also involve the person's spiritual values and, you know, so forth. So I would just say it's not so neat as to divide the three stools into body, mind, and spirit. But I think it's more helpful to think in terms of the kind of more descriptively pragmatic phenomena that are necessary, such as involuntary attraction that is mutual, and the willingness and ability, and as I say, willingness. If you don't have any will to work on the relationship, then what can you do? You know.
Well, love is an act of will.
Yes, love is an act of will, but some people, you know, I've heard some people say, you know, I'm not getting my needs met, and you know, so I'm out of here. Well, there's no will to work on it. So okay, well then, you know, the one person can't do it all by himself. So. Okay, then that's a time when you have to recognize you've gotten involved with you know, somebody that's incompatible here, and bye-bye, but then learn from that to do the screening necessary to assure that, as I said, if you do really do a rigorous screening on these three things, then there's no reason that you can't work things out when inevitably things pop up that are problems. Yeah.
With the screening, what's the
best or most effective way in terms of finding out if someone's attracted to you?
Okay. I think that you have to remember that the person, if he is attracted to you, that the person is going to be reluctant to let you know, because the person's afraid of rejection. So if you take the initial step and show some interest, then the person is going to, just as you would, if somebody that you were attracted to started to show you some interest, you'd say, "Ooh, goody," you know, and so you would attend back to that person, you see. And so it's kind of a little dance of attending and attending, you know, back and forth. But nothing is going to transpire unless the more rational one makes the first move, you know. Some people are just rash, and they'll just, you know, and they have learned through trial and error that if you just, you know, run up and you know, come on to enough people, some people will, you know, and so they've sort of trained themselves to do that. But in the meantime, you know, they've turned off a lot of people. You know, oh, here he comes. You know, so I think just now you see, shortly we will be having dinner over here in the dining room, right? What time is dinner?
Five
in 10 minutes. Now you have an opportunity to put this stuff into practice. You see? Now look, there are not very many of you here. So most of those people are just dumber than anything. They know about it. You know something they don't know. You know that you can't be rejected. They can say no. Well, what are they saying no to? Their version of you. Not the one that you think is unattractive. If you could see why they're saying no, you might take it as a compliment. See? Because it's not anything you intend to be. See? So you know that you can't be rejected. So just go down and sit down at a table with some people, then maybe one or two of them you're interested in, and just have a civil conversation. I'll tell you, if you have a civil conversation, in probably most of the cases, you'll say, positive screened them out, you know, positive expression, positive experience, I've screened him out, because he's not all that interesting as I thought he was going to be. Now,
first you have to find out whether they have a partner.
Oh, yes. Well, one of the ways to find that out is just to ask. You know, say, well, tell me about yourself. What's going on with you? And you know, so. Now, if you see from their name tag that they're from the other side of the country from where you are, how available really are they? You see? Keep that in mind. Just to chat and if they're not interested, you don't lose anything because that person could not possibly meet your need. If they are interested and you take the first step, they will be glad about that, you see, until maybe then they see, oh, this isn't who I thought it was, and then they change their mind, you see? And that's fine. Again, you've won, right? You've won. This is a no-lose situation. Win-win. Yes?
Yes, yeah.
Listen. No, you win. Yes? No. Right? How many times have you thought, I've won with this one, and then I just have to get away from this, you know? People do the same thing with me about jobs. Listen, I just needed to do well on this interview. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, they get the job. And then a couple weeks later, oh, it's not what I thought it was going to be. See? But if they hadn't gotten the job, it would have always been the ideal job, right? Don't let yourself do that with somebody here that says no to you or doesn't show any interest. All right? So you're forewarned is forearmed, and you have the tools. Back in New York, it takes those New Yorkers a long time to get these tools. You got it in an hour and a half. So go out there and you do you know, years ago there was two people, even in the group. And I said, hey, welcome. And they did. They got together. And they were together for a few years, but now they're not. But yeah, put it to use. Bye-bye.